get after it on a Tuesday afternoon. Welcome to The People Show. I'm Vic Nazar, Elon Dom running the show behind the glass, broadcasting from the Kintech Studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 1,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintech.net. You can always be part of the show as well, 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Pack show today. We'll talk to Mark Schofield in the back half of the show. Also, Yannick Hansen joining us in a couple of moments here. We've got some things to give away as well. $50 Match Eatery gift cards. That's coming up later on in the show as well. But let's start with it. As much as you love listening to me, I know it's Tuesday. I know you want to listen to Yannick Hansen, longtime NHLer and former Vancouver Canuck. Brought to you by Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. Joining us now, Yannick Hansen. Yannick, how are you?
Can't complain yourself.
It's all good. You're protected by the snow, or are you getting ready for an onslaught here?
Yeah, well, we got to get the kids, but they're excited for the first snowfall here. And I guess I'm not going to lie that I'm looking forward to bringing out my skis as well for the first time this year. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, a lot changes here in a week here for the Vancouver Canucks. Literally 2 weeks ago, we hadn't seen them. You know, it was this winning streak of 5 of 6. It was started 2 weeks ago today, and the view of the team was a lot grimmer. I'll pose it to you this way. Like, because they've been volatile, right? They start the season 2-8, and now they go 5-6, and we've kind of seen what they can do last year as well. Can this group be trusted? Because people want to say, okay, this is what the team is right now, and I'm not entirely convinced, you know, a 6-game sample is who this team is permanently now.
No, I think, again, that this team is not good enough to go where you need to go. They need some help on the back end. And these three games they just won is not going to change that. We knew they were better than they were, what they showed. There's no question about that. But, again, it puts them now in a position to where you can almost reach it again. Like, they're within a couple of games of 500. Again, they got the two wins against Vegas and Colorado, which you probably wouldn't have expected. They're very nice to get, and they put yourself in a position now going into San Jose where you can really get something here. Going into San Jose, all of a sudden you're in front of that where this is a game we have to win. If we don't get points in Colorado and Vegas, who cares? Like, we're so far away. Mm-hmm. But now we have to win. We have to go into a very tough situation. We play on 20 hours since the last night, 19 hours. It's hard to come back that quick after a game, and you have to find a way to win. And they did. It was back and forth and all these things, but they found a way to win this game, which a lot of times in the past when we've looked at these games where this is a game you have to win, they've lost that game. So that was nice to see. And now you're coming back home, and they have a lot of home games now down the stretch here, where you can, again, improve on your standings, if you will. So, again, it's squarely in their own hands right now, and it's entirely up to them how this season is going to shape still.
What have you actually liked in these six games here, and particularly the three-game winning streak? You know, we've talked about overall defensive play, but it seems like the physicality has picked up a bit as well from the group.
They're scoring. Mm-hmm. As long as you're scoring, then you can win these games. Again, it was nice to see them not giving up in bunches in Vegas against San Jose. You give up three goals again. You give up a lead late in the game and you get into overtime, which is kind of the same thing we don't want to see. We'd like to see them, again, you score these goals, which gets you leads. Now hold on to it. Don't give it up. Don't let teams back into the game. I know they didn't have these two or three goals lead against San Jose, but again, you're up with, 8-10 minutes to go. Seal the deal. That's your game. Win it, run it out, whatever you need to be. You need to find this killer instinct where once you're up, once you have teams where you want them, you close the bag, and that's it. And then you find a way to, I wouldn't say win easy, but again, it's not easy when you go into overtime or shootout or whatever it is to be in order to get your 2 points. find a way to take these ones, get it out of the way, and then leave San Jose with a win in regulation instead.
One of the things, talking points that's come up these past few games is the goaltender usage. Over the past 14 games, it's been 50-50 between Spencer Martin and Thatcher Demko. And I think there's a difference between, you know, goalie controversy and just what Spencer Martin can contribute just to alleviate the stress and the workload for Thatcher Demko while he works his game out. So, because I think when people think controversy, it's, okay, this guy's going to take over the crease permanently. Do you like the usage right now that it's purely 50-50 right now?
Well, you kind of have to with Demko not winning enough games, because in all fairness, Spencer Martin does get you the win as of late. When he's in, they tend to win, which is great. Numbers are the same. He gives up a lot of goals too. He just gets a lot more goals scored when he's playing, so it's not like he's pitching these one-goal shutouts or anything like that. No, he's given up three. He's given up four as well. He's benefited from Canucks scoring five or six in the games he's been in, so it's not like it's an end to all their troubles throwing him in there. But there's no question Demko is their goalie. They gotta get him back. So while he works it out, I have no problem with them sharing more of the load, if you will, giving him some of the, what do you say, easier games, more important games as well. So in a perfect world, you'd give Spencer Martin the back-to-backs, these games where you're like, okay, Demko need a rest, and it's already been planned 3-4 weeks in advance. Give him some more right now and see if he can continue winning. Because again, what do you want right now if you're the Canucks? It's scraping those wins together.
You know, what's the worry then, if and when this drops off? Because they're going to lose a game. You're not going to play perfect all the way. But, you know, when they have a loss, what's the key to, you know, keeping that, what's happened here remains the standard?
Yeah, that you got to find a way to get right back into the win column. Because, again, you found a way to win these three games, and now we're talking about, okay, you're almost at 500. Well, the difference between winning and tonight and losing tonight, it's going to put a big hole in them again. So that's where now you got to stick with it. And yeah, you can afford to lose. But if you lose, scrape out a point. Make it a loser point, if you will. That's kind of the position they put themselves in with that start they had, where now you don't have the benefit. Like Vegas, Vancouver comes in and they get blown out. Who cares? Nobody remembers that now. They're still 10 games above 500 and they had a stinker. Well, you can't afford that if you start the way the Canucks do. Now you got to keep plugging away, keep piling in these wins, keep scraping points together that people don't expect you to get. That's kind of the only way back into it now.
Talking to Yannick Hansen, longtime NHLer and former Vancouver Canuck here on the People's Show. Elias Pettersson, since we last talked again, continues to grow into the season. We saw, you know, the matchup opportunity versus MacKinnon, and it really feels like the ice is starting to tilt in his favor. And the other thing that's happened too is the wingers alongside him too are starting to obviously produce, but it seems like Mikheyev and Kuzmenko are starting to get their recognition as well.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's whoever's playing with him, but he's had some consistency now with them, and that line has really taken off. It took Mikheyev maybe 10 games or something like that to really find his footing, get on the score sheet, feel like he's really contributing, where Kuzmenko started out really hot and then a little bit of a lull, a healthy scratch, and now the last couple of games, again, he's producing in spades. So it's great to see that he can have this impact, that he can... Again, it's not entirely Petey, but again, a lot of the stuff that happens on the ice rotates around the center. That's just the way the position is set up. He needs to feed his wingers. He needs to get the puck through the neutral zone and into their hands and all these things. So it's good to see that they found for sure some chemistry. And it's not just that, oh, there, we might have something. No, it's 20 games into the season now, so I think you can start to think about something in the long term here. Again, Mikheyev is signed for a long time. Again, Kuzmenko is on a one-year deal, but again, I'm assuming if he continue to produce like this, it's somebody who they want to stay around for a little bit longer. He's mid-20s as well, so it's good to see. We've been talking about Petey and his line mates, and for the last, as long as I can remember, they have been rotating. I know he had some consistency with I think it was JT Miller and Besser, one year where they really had a long run and producing a lot. But since that, it's been a revolving door. And again, if he's your number one center, which I think he should be, he needs consistency. Not just because you can put anybody with Petey and they play better. No, he needs to be beating other teams' top guys. And if other teams want to match up against him, he needs to be able to beat those guys too. And the only way to do that is if your line is good enough to do that. And that's not something that you can say, okay, Petey, you go out and do this every single night. No, you need some consistency. You need guys that you know to work with. So you get these little advantages, these little edges around where when the margin for error, if you will, is so slim, and all it really takes is that you know exactly where your line mates are going to be all the time, and that puts you over the top. So it's good to see some consistency with him.
How many games did you feel like you needed with two other line mates to develop that chemistry?
It takes a while, and especially depending on players. It's not something you develop overnight, and it's not something you develop through training camp either, because you need to be playing games. You need to do it when it matters, because that trust, it doesn't just come by a week or something. Like, it takes 10, 15, 20, half a season sometimes to develop all these little things, where now we don't really need to talk and communicate out there, because I know that when you're coming in off the wing, if you're pulling off, I'm driving, and if you get pinched off, I know you're going to chip it, and I'm picking it up, and you're filling the middle. All these little things that you just kind of rely off, and it takes time. And then you talk about it in practice. You talk about it over the breakfast table. Well, what are we doing here and there? And they work really well. We continue these things. So you start building on these little agreements or rules within your line, within guys. And that's how it slowly develops. And then it just becomes the norm.
Because the reason I ask, and you mentioned Kuzmenko there, it's a guy who's on a one-year deal, and if this continues to work and we look at a stage and this is one of the best lines in hockey, you know, how much of a priority of getting that sorted out to, you know, build around a line around Elias Pettersson that in the future you don't have to worry about, okay, like we keep have to find the third guy for Mikheyev and Pettersson. How important does someone like Kuzmenko's role as far as the team build become?
Well, he fills a role. And again, I can go back to my time. Even when Burr was as good as he was with the Twins, they were still looking for guys. They were still adding guys around. Oh, maybe this guy can go in and fill the role. Maybe this guy can come in. Was it Vabada? Was it Samuelson? Oh, we come back to Burr. It's still those guys, Mikheyev, Kuzmenko, Besser, they fill in around your key players, which is your centers 99% of the time. And then you got to find a way to make them work. But you need these players to obviously have the chemistry, obviously have the skill to play with them as well. But you need a handful of guys, and then you got to find out which work with who. So it's not like, okay, now we have these two, and that's the only thing that'll work. There might come somebody in a couple of years that worked better, but again, you want options for your coach. And right now you have options. You can go to a three line. I know you have four lines, but you can go to a three line team with this. If you throw JT back at center, you can go really heavy on a top six if you want to. Right now, JT on the wing. So this means Bruce or whoever is coaching the team have options. So if things aren't going well, if you need to change things, if there's injuries, then you have a multitude of players to switch from, choose around in the lineup that have worked in the past, can work in the future, and that gives you, it's a lot harder to match up against. It's a lot harder or easier for the coach, again, if something happens, sickness, injuries, whatever it might be, that you have options. So it's nice that they have a plethora of wingers now that they can switch around, but again, the consistency now is obviously key, and for the next foreseeable future here, you'd like to see what they can do together, just to see if this is really something, or it's this is great for 5, 10, 15 games, but then it flutters again, or is this something where we're the best line in hockey, as you mentioned, and this is something we can carry for 40 games or even longer.
on Pedersen, you know, I've been saying on the show a little bit here that it's 27 points in 22 games, and it's been phenomenal. And yet, like, there's no power play goals so far. And so what he's doing, it's mostly coming at 5-on-5, and it's fantastic. Is there even still, like, another level that you see that he can get to?
Yeah, you can't fault the power play either, because they're scoring now.
Yeah.
And that power play has been scoring from the other side. But I will say, I think one of the reasons is they're scoring is because you cheat on him. And I see it every time you see a penalty kill. That far side winger, when as soon as it comes up to Hughes, you see that winger already cutting off that passing lane, because they hate to give up that one-timer that he got. Because it's very, very hard, and it's very accurate, and it's very hard to stop. So as a penalty kill unit, as a goaltender, and as a team, you prefer Quinn Hughes or JT Miller to shoot that puck. Preferably not Bo, because he's a little bit closer. But you want the puck in a stationary spot, which the half wall or the point is. Because it's half the ice, and you can only cut the ice in half. You don't want it moving over to Petey, because now everybody is shifting, and you get caught out of position. So again, you... as a penalty killing unit, you want JT to shoot. You want the point shot from Quinn Hughes. You do not want it from Petey. And that's why they take it away. And again, obviously the Canucks are good enough now to find these holes. And again, Bo has been an absolute ace in this, because that slot spot is not an easy. If you see a lot of the power plays that are really, really good, Boston, Tampa, to name a few, it's Stamkos on a one-timer on the outside. It's Pasternak on the one-timer on the outside. It's not that slot. You look at Washington, it's Ovechkin on the outside, or Washington does have a very good bumper spot too, or at least they used to. But it's very hard to find the holes in the middle of the ice and get your quality shots off, which Bo has been doing for quite a while now, and it's opening up a lot of lanes for them as well.
Because, you know, there was a stretch last year where, like, near the end of last year, and I don't know, like, it's end of season, and what was the immediacy of those games, but, you know, he got 21 and 13, and realistically, like, he's it feels like he could have a 15-game stretch where it's 28, 30 points here, and I'm just curious, like, where that's going to come from, because he doesn't handle the puck a lot on the power play, as you detailed of why that happens. Is there an element to his game where maybe it's down the road of he should handle the puck on the power play?
He's a good enough passer, obviously, but that shot is like, you want to take advantage of that. And again, the way Canucks are set up right now, it's all lefties.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have to have the puck on the other side. It's different if you have three righties out there with him, then give Petey the puck and he's going to feed those three shooters. But when the shooter is Bo Horvat, it's Petey and it's Quinn Hughes, then you got to find a way to get the puck in their hands, and again you shift the passer on the other side of the ice. That's just the way they're set up right now.
Talking to Yannick Hansen here, longtime NHLer and former Vancouver Canuck on the People Show. The other thing we saw this week is Vasily Podkolzin and Jack Rathbone were sent back down to the AHL. Now, Podkolzin, obviously more than Rathbone, has gotten a lot more NHL time. When you see that, what do you think of? And is it the right move?
Yeah, absolutely. He's not playing. They're not playing. Get them down. Get them playing. In a perfect world, neither Podkolzin either would have made the NHL right off the bat, in my opinion. Again, he was good enough. He contribute stuff, but like development, 20 minutes a night, get him playing PK, get him playing power play, see where you gonna end up. At a 19, 20 year old, you don't know what you have yet. And if you pigeonhole him into a third line spot and little specialty teams or nothing, and then you don't really know what you got. So get him playing a ton of minutes and see what he can develop into. Again, the young players, they need to play in order to develop, or you end up status quo, when you could have probably moved these players a little bit more if they had a little bit more seasoning, gotten a little bit better, a little bit stronger, and then come in on a different footing and really grab whatever player they're meant to be from when you draft them to when you expect them to be in their prime.
So then for someone like Podkolzin in particular, just because he's, you know, a higher draft pick, and you see the management group make this move, does that say something about them as well?
Again, it did. That's all I knew ever. When I played, I can't remember anybody stepping right off the draft floor and into our team. Mm-hmm. So that was the norm. That was how you developed. Again, it shifted throughout my career. Like in the beginning, when I got drafted, I was a kid. Like I looked at weights, but I haven't lifted for real. towards the end, when guys like Bull showed up, he was stronger as a 18, 19-year-old than I was as a 26-year-old. So it's one of those things that it shifted to. Players were more ready physical-wise, maybe not maturity, but definitely their bodies were ready to play. But again, it's NHL is a result-based league. So coaches, management, everybody's going to want to win. Yeah, there are teams that are in the bottom and want draft, but like Vancouver want to win. There's no question about it this year. So if you want to develop your players, there's only one place for them to do that. And in order to develop, you need to make mistakes because you got to play with the puck. You got to take some chances here and there to get better, to play under pressure, to make these decisions. And you're going to make wrong decisions. And again, if you're not allowed to do that, if you can't do that, which you shouldn't be in the NHL, you should play to perfection in order to win. Well, then you need to find somewhere else. And that happens in the minors where you can fine-tune your game. And I've mentioned this in the past, like we would spend hours on practice after practice just getting pucks rimmed around the boards, picking them up, lift them a little bit out and chipping them out, getting out of the blue line. Simple plays like this, just learning to take pucks off the boards under pressure or whatever it might be, to hone your craft as a winger, to learn what to do. Okay, where am I going to put this puck? How am I going to pick it off the boards when it comes around like a hand grenade? You don't have time to do that in NHL because coaches blow the whistle and there's a little bit of stuff, but then they want you off the ice, they want you resting and ready for the game, where in the minors there's a little bit more time for this in the way the games are set up, fewer games as well. So it's a fantastic league to play in, and by no means is this the end of the world getting sent down, because like I mentioned, you're going to get more ice time, more responsibility, and a chance to become a better player.
Before we let you go, actually, one last question here, because they're playing the Capitals tonight. I'm sure you would have been on the penalty kill with Alex Ovechkin out there. What made it so challenging to kind of be aware of where he was at all the time? Because we kind of know he's in the general area, but what was always so challenging about facing him on the power play?
That he wasn't the only option. That was the biggest issue, because if he's the only option, you just plant a guy right next to him. But like I mentioned, they had three, potentially four plays when Backstrom had it on the half wall. They'd either go down to the goal line, up to the slot, they go up to the point, or they go goal line and then through to Ovechkin. So you can only cover so many bases, which means you either left TJ Oshie, you left John Carlson, you left Ovechkin open, or whoever was the goal line player. And you can only cover, you had to leave one open, and the guy that was open was such a quality player that they could still put it in the net. And that's why you kept seeing that power play hovering above 20%, which was very, very hard to do. So it's about option. And yeah, you got to have quality out there as well. But once you have more than one play that are dangerous, that's when teams start. So, okay, now we got a second guess. What are we covering? And we have to cheat a little bit here because we don't quite know where it's going. And then it gets open and all you need is a little opening.
I'm just trying to look through the numbers here with him on the power play and you on the PK. I think you did pretty well against him. So
we didn't play that much against
yeah.
him, so that was an advantage. But like I said, it was especially earlier. It just no highlights when he's on the ice. So that would be a good that's a good bench baseline.
Yannick, we appreciate it as always, and good luck with the match tomorrow as well.
Yeah, thank you. Enjoy.
Always love the chat with Yannick Hansen, brought to you by Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford, on both sides of the Fraser to serve you, and getting ready for Denmark and Australia tomorrow. All right, we got to go to break. Before we go, though, 604-280-0650. Call in. Caller number 5 picking up a $50 gift card to Match Eatery. And this Sunday, we're pairing up Sportsnet 650 with Match Eatery and Public House for Sportsnet 650 Sunday at Cascades Casino in Delta. Myself, Randeep Janda, and the Sportsnet 650 Street Team on Sunday from 1 to 5. Going to be there checking out all the marquee matchups. Match Eatery and Public House offering the social traditions of a neighborhood pub, the high energy of a sports bar. We're going to be giving some stuff away, too. Tickets to the Canucks, tickets to the December 11th game for the Seattle Seahawks, some smart sneakers, some 650 gear as well, and get to hang out with me and Randeep. It's basically like winning a prize from 1 to 5 at Match Eatery and Public House, located at the new Cascades Casino next to the Massey Tunnel. Mark Schofield on the way here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to the People Show, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. We'll connect with Mark Schofield in just a moment, QB analyst, NFL writer at SB Nation. Big shout out to Joe, winning the Match Eatery gift card. $50, we'll be doing those all week long. And also, remember, myself and Randeep Janda will be on location at Match Eatery in Delta, next to the Massey Tunnel, coming up on Sunday from 1 to 5 o'clock. Again, Mark Schofield in just a minute. People's Picks with Guest Alliance on the way as well. A big event happening this Friday, too, from 6 to 10 a.m. Get to kick off the holiday season with A Loving Spoonful and City News 1130. A delicious breakfast by donation, minimum $5, this Friday at the Fountainhead Pub anytime between 6 to 10 a.m. If you attend, you got a chance to win a fabulous door prize. City News 1130 will be on location as well, and you can make your holiday donation for a possible opportunity to be on air as well. All donations helping to support A Loving Spoonful, their programs, and the new kitchen as well. Get more details on the events page at citynews.ca and help be part of the holiday spirit. All right, let's connect with Mark Schofield, QB analyst, NFL writer at SB Nation. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing well, Vic. How are you this afternoon, my friend?
I'm still smarting over a Raiders win over the Seattle Seahawks, which we'll get to in just a moment. But I was mentioning yesterday that it felt like a bit of a, I don't want to say boring, but less exciting week 12. You know, we had three Thanksgiving games and some high-profile QBs and players were out of the mix, but it felt like Mike White became the story of week 12, which I'm not sure I would have believed a week ago.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have told me a couple weeks ago that, hey, right after Thanksgiving, we're going to be talking about Mike White in the driver's seat for the New York Jets, I would have thought something drastic had happened.
Yeah.
But maybe, Vic, something drastic did happen. And, you know, he was impressive against the Bears on Sunday.
So what part of it, like, stood out? Because there's the element of, hey, are you a functional NFL quarterback or are you just better than Zach Wilson? So what about Mike White, like, makes it such look like such a stark difference?
Yeah, I mean, I think what he did on Sunday was play the position within the confines and structure of the offense at a much more fluid and efficient level than Zach Wilson. So I think there is that component to it. But also, when you look back at him coming out of Western Kentucky, you know, and I looked back and writing about him on Sunday afternoon, you know, it's some old scouting reports that I did on him, and Lance Erline, for example, an NFL comment done on him. And Lance noted that his first sport was baseball. There was this thought that he was going to be a Major League Baseball pitcher because of his arm talent. And you saw that on Sunday against the Bears. The dig route that went for the catch and run touchdown to Garrett Wilson, he threw that on a line but had enough to get it over the linebacker who just missed it by like inches but still then dropped it down. And so there's certainly an arm talent element to his game that stood out. But really, it was the 5-yard hitch against off coverage. I'll just take it, catch it, and throw it. You know, the quick out route against off coverage or an inside leverage defender, I'll just take it and throw it. I don't need to make this game harder on myself. And that, I think, was what Zach Wilson was struggling with, because there were moments watching Zach Wilson over the first couple of weeks of his you know, because he was out for injury when he came back and as he got into the flow of the season, watching him, there were times when his eyes, Beck, and his feet were right. He was looking at the right option. The ball wasn't coming out. It was like he wasn't sort of trusting himself, and he wasn't taking those layups. He wasn't hitting the layups. Forget hitting them. He wasn't even trying them. Mike White was taking the layups when they afforded to him, but then when it came time to dial up velocity on tougher throw, he had that too. And I think that's sort of the big difference between Wilson and White. Wilson was not taking the layups, let alone missing them. Mike White was hitting those layups, was taking those layups, and that's the difference between an efficient quarterback and a quarterback that's struggling.
The other guy I want to hit on, who's he's far different class of quarterback than Mike White, is Trevor Lawrence. We've talked about him a lot this season where are their struggles. Is it part learning the offense, and is he going to be labeled that generational guy as first overall? And then I think this past weekend we got a moment of, oh, right, this is what he can do. A fantastic performance, 29-37, 321 yards, 3 touchdowns as well. And it felt like he finally got a marquee, hey, I'm a number one overall guy moment.
Yeah, and I love what he said after the game. The line was, I've always been this guy. I thought that was perfect. And it kind of does sum up this, first half, of this season and then even last year. There were moments when it was like, yeah, you could point to a throw, you could point to a read, you could point to a moment and say, this is why he went first overall, but it never fully came together. He didn't have, like you said, that marquee victory, that marquee game. He had that on Sunday. And what really stood out to me in the fourth quarter, because I talk to scouts and coaches and all the time, and when they're evaluating quarterbacks, particularly for the draft, I hear third downs, fourth quarter, red zone. Like, that's what we study first. Like, we will watch cut-ups of those situations first because those are the money moments that you need to excel at as a quarterback. In that fourth down, he was almost perfect. And it was mechanically how he was perfect. The fourth and five corner route that he threw to the right side, where it's just take your drop, hit that last step of your drop, don't even use a hitch step, ball is coming out. That route, that throw is designed for most quarterbacks to use that hitch step. But he has that arm talent to just make that throw. He had another fourth down conversion on an out route to the left side, pressure in his face, can't step into it. All arm talent to make that throw with velocity. Some of the throws late, the two-point conversion, the touchdown to Agnew, where it's just you've got to put this throw in the absolute right spot. The touchdown to Jones in the corner in the end zone. Throws that are so tough to execute against air, Bick. But he's doing it in the fourth quarter of an NFL game on Sunday when you have to have those plays. It was the kind of impressive performance that those of us that had Lawrence as QB1, those of us that have remained high on him, those of us that have kept saying on shows like this and others that, hey, no, I know it looks bad or he's struggled or he's had some ups and downs. He's still the guy. He's still the guy. And the guy that we saw in the fourth quarter is, I think, the guy we're going to see a lot more of going forward.
Now, they've spent on Christian Kirk last year. Is the next part of, like, accelerating Trevor Lawrence's development is going out and getting another guy? Like, Josh Allen got Stephon Diggs, right? And other quarterbacks have gotten their guy. Is that part of it? Or is it also, like, an offensive line thing? As soon as they start building that out, we'll see this with a lot more regularity.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that, look, they're a team that will still need some weapons to go. I mean, Christian Kirk, I was one of the few people that was kind of like high on it. I thought that, hey, this is a move that's going to work because a lot of what Doug Peterson does conceptually is vertical through the slot with tight ends and slot receivers. Lawrence is a very good vertical ball thrower. And I thought with Christian Kirk and his skill set as a vertical slot receiver, it made a lot of sense. I think, finding another weapon, downfield threat, perhaps through the draft, it could be a decent draft class. Depending on who ends up coming out, that might be a good use of draft capital. Also, sure, making sure you have that best five in front of him to make sure that he has more time in the pocket than he's perhaps had to this point in his career, I think will certainly help. Luke Fortner, the third-round pick at center, has shown that he can hold up. Obviously, they have Brandon Scherff at guard. So they're piecing together, the elements of the offensive line that they need. But I think what we're also seeing is Doug Peterson does deserve some credit here, because let's not forget, in Philadelphia, he had Wentz playing at an extremely high level, along with Frank Reich and, you know, Coach John DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach at the time. They had Wentz playing at an MVP level before his injury in 17. Peterson is one of those coaches that does have that record of quarterback development. You know, he played the position, you know, under Andy Reid. Like, he knows offensive football well. You see how his offensives are constructed, you know, schematically, with the reads and the options and the conversions and the half field reads and all the sort of quarterback friendly stuff that he puts in front of quarterbacks. You're seeing that start to pay off. And then the final element is confidence. And when you have the ability to say, hey, Trevor, let's go for two, let's go win this thing, and that team sort of responds in that moment, that's going to be the confidence component of it for Trevor Lawrence. And so the pieces are sort of coming together for Jacksonville. There are, you know, things that they can add, and the receivers solidify the offensive line. But I think the pieces are really coming together.
Talking to Mark Schofield from SB Nation about week 12 and some quarterbacks. I'm stumbling here because I'm a little bit worried to ask about Geno Smith. Were these the first signs of slippage from Geno Smith this season?
I mean, I don't know if Dick, I'd go as far as to say it was, you know, slippage or anything like that. I mean, I was rewatching him, you know, this afternoon to get ready to come on, and, you know, I'm looking at that interception from every angle, and it just almost seems like route miscommunication more than anything else. You know, you look at the play in overtime, obviously, where it's a 3rd and 5, you've got to have, and I think Max Crosby deserves, you know, a ton of credit for the pass rushing move that he put together, because, mm-hmm. you know, he's on Smith before he's even finished his drop. You know, he kind of flings the ball away and it falls incomplete. You know, they had an opportunity to make a play there. They had a nice route design call that he was going to be able to make a play on. You know, he had some throws in that game that were impressive. And I also think, you know, I talked a little bit about context earlier. You know, it's important to remember that this team, the Seattle roster, is ahead of what we thought the schedule was going to be. You know, the fact that they're, you know, here we are right after Thanksgiving here in the States, and they're in the playoff hunt in the NFC West. And it's looking like, you know, they could probably get into the playoffs. And yet, oh, by the way, you know, they're in a position to really turn things around roster-wise mm-hmm. in the next couple of years because of that Wilson trade. I think it's important to sort of remember that, remember where they are right now as opposed to where we thought they were going to be. Were there some mistakes made in the passing game from Smith on Sunday? Yeah. You know, did you lose a game to a team that you probably should have defeated? Yeah, there's that too. But I don't think it's a situation where it's like, oh, okay, well, we need to scrap where we've been. We need to start thinking about Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud. Like, you have to go down that road. I think it was just one of those games where they had some mistakes. They've had some the other side of the ball, made some plays. And you have to sort of piece it together and move on and hope those aren't repeated.
You mentioned the Denver side of that trade. Russell Wilson, it just goes from bad to worse. And actually, I'll lump Aaron Rodgers in with this. Now, I know there was the injury component to this, but it's really about, like, succession plans, because we saw Jordan Love play for the Green Bay Packers. You know, I kind of made the point yesterday that the contracts kind of dictate that these guys are going to be there for a long time. It's like an $85 million dead cap for Russell Wilson, $99, I think, for Aaron Rodgers next season. So I think those guys will be there. But, you know, for those two teams, are they looking at a spot where, you know, succession plans might come faster than they realized?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, especially in Green Bay, a lot of it, look, you know, Bill Parcells had that line, you know, when a guy starts talking about retirement or has one foot out the door or whatever, you know, they're already gone. You know, and you've heard retirement rumblings from Rodgers in the past, and so you wonder, you know, what decision does he make? You know, the way that the season is winding down for him, the thumb injury, like you said, the oblique rib injury that he had from Sunday night, you wonder, okay, how much longer is he going to play? Yes, they, you know, they have Jordan Love, but do we know, do they know what they have in Jordan Love? Now, they have this game against Chicago, and then they have their bye. It doesn't look like they're going to make any sort of playoff run, sitting here at 4-8 right now. It's not like they're 6-6 or 7-5. So maybe Rodgers plays this weekend, they go into the bye, and they give Love the final couple of starts of the season to figure out exactly what they have in them, because they need to make a decision about that succession plan. Is it going to be Jordan Love? Do they give him, you know, a new contract to sort of make sure he's in place? Or do they decide, hey, you know, we're going to go in a different direction. We're going to, you know, move on from Jordan Love. We're going to, you know, perhaps try to see if somebody will take him on. Maybe we'll try to move him via a trade or do something else with him. You know, that's a decision that Green Bay is going to have to make. And so it makes me think that in terms of figuring out that succession plan, you know, they might have to go into a different direction. They might have to see what they have in Jordan Love. And so, you know, that's the Green Bay situation. It is kind of messy. It's one of those situations where, you know, I'm always reminded of, you know, Tom Brady's dad. You know, it always ends, and it always ends badly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we going to see that kind of situation play out in Green Bay? You know, the Denver situation, you know, looking at his Russell Wilson's page on SpotTrack right now, and it's like potential out 2026, and it's still $31.2 million in dead cap.
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of tied into that for, you know, they could move. I think the cap hit next year is like $22 million, then it goes up. I mean, it's a deal that, like, you know, the dead cap in 23 is $107 million. You know, I mean, that's a big number. Dead cap in 24 is 85. Dead cap in 25 is 49. Then the dead cap at least starts to come down a little bit. They seem to be locked in there. And, I mean, I think given those kind of numbers, it's going to be hard to then address quarterback a different way. It's just that Wilson trade, it's hard to point. I know people have said, well, maybe the Herschel Walker trade or some other trades, but it's really looking right now, because like, that's one of the toughest trades in recent NFL history.
Just really quickly here, just like 30, 45 seconds. Like, when we talk about Brady, it's a physical slip. But like Russell, I don't see physical slip. Like, is this a concept thing? Is this marrying talent to the scheme? Like, what is the issue there?
You know, I'm sure you and your listeners, you remember the days when he was in Seattle and there was the tension between, you know, what the offense was supposed to be like and maybe what Russell Wilson wanted that offense to look like. And I remember hearing people like Seth Galina at Pro Football Focus and others say, look, it's not a Seattle offense. It's a Wilson offense. You know, it's kind of where he wants to be as a quarterback, which is move it outside of the pocket, create an offensive structure, almost turning things into a scramble drill as much as he can. That worked for him in Seattle, you know, but that takes time to develop, you know, and it took time to develop in Seattle earlier in his career. Seattle was sort of playing within the concepts and structure and confines of the offense, but then he started to sort of create a little bit more as he got older and, you know, developed his talent and skill set. It's not meshing right now with the players in Denver because it takes time to develop that. It takes time for the offensive line to get a feel for where he's going to be. It takes time for receivers to get those scramble drum moments down and relate to him when he moves out of the pocket. It doesn't get built overnight. Now, maybe they can turn it around and it's better in year two and year three, but right now, it's not working, and you're seeing the results week in and week out.
Hey, what was the best throw of week 12?
One of Lawrence's throws, the deep one along the left side. It's the sort of sail concept. You've got the vertical, the deep out, Christian Kirk in a little flat, and it's, again, against too high, one of those whole shot type of throws where you've got the corner sinking vertically, you've got the safety coming over. You can only put it in one spot, and he does it in a huge moment. It was just a masterful fourth quarter from Trevor Lawrence, and it was absolutely a joy to watch.
Mark, you're always a joy to listen to. We always appreciate it, man.
Thanks so much, Dick. Always a blast. Have a great evening.
At Mark Schofield on Twitter. Make sure you give him a follow, QB analyst, NFL writer for SB Nation. All right, let's get to the People's Picks, brought to you by PlayNow Sports. Every game will feel like the big game when you bet with PlayNow Sports, brought to you by BCLC. Tuesday, you hear the music. That means it's Guess the Lines. Dom's going to hit me up with some lines for Week 13 in the NFL season. What's going on?
We have some really exciting mashups, actually, in Week 13 of the NFL season. So let's get right to it, shall we? Jaguars at Detroit Lions.
Jaguars off of that massive win against the Ravens and the Detroit Lions, who played on Thanksgiving. You got to figure the Jaguars are favored on the road here, and they're going to be in the dome. Give me Jaguars 1.5. That was a buzzer? Oh, that's no good.
To the next one. We have an NFC.
Wait. What's the line?
Oh, one under for the Jags.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Two-man operation this week. We're working out the kinks. NFC East, Commanders at Giants.
Commanders suddenly pushing towards a playoff spot. They got the 7th seed over the Seattle Seahawks with their win over the Atlanta Falcons. I think some of the shine finally starting to come off of the New York Giants. They a stretch of divisional games here. Dallas last week, Philadelphia coming up, Commanders right now. I think the juice is starting to come in on these Commanders. Give me Commanders on the road minus 1.5. Lower. Higher?
Commanders minus 2.5.
Oh.
Shall we move on?
Okay.
Chiefs at Bengals. Chiefs at Bengals.
Chiefs at Bengals. The Chiefs feel like they had a subtle good week against the LA Rams. Bengals pick out a big victory against those Tennessee Titans, who just make it difficult every single week. Let's go Chiefs. Am I doing another home favorite? Or sorry, road favorite? Chiefs got to be favored. Not the full 3, 2.5. All right.
There you go.
Got one there.
Where should we go to next? Oh, of course. Jets at Vikings.
You just love these ones. Jets at Vikings. The power rankings are going to be interesting tomorrow. I boosted the Jets quite a bit. I don't know if they're still top 10 material. You know how I feel about the Vikings. Oh, man, this is closer than we realized, though, because the Jets can maul you in the trenches, which is my concern with the Vikings. Give me Vikings minus 1.5. Oh, big thumbs down from you. What's up?
Vikings minus 3.
Full field goal treatment.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I think the Jets might be making an appearance on Pick 6 this week.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but at this point of the exercise, you got one more for me there?
I do. Last one we'll go to, where is it? Seahawks at Rams. Got to fit the Seahawks.
Okay. The Rams are having all sorts of problems. The Seahawks, that loss really hurt. And it was a high-scoring one, so people start to fade away on the defense. And again, we talked about Geno, turnover, fumble. They're going to be a road favorite, but probably not as much. 3.5 or 4, I'll say. I was going to go with 4.
Quick trigger.
I was going to go with 4. Apparently, I'm way off.
Yeah, you are way off. It's 7.5.
Wow. Full touchdown road divisional favorite.
Well, Stafford is still in concussion.
No, I know. That's still a lot, though. Like, that team was struggling with Stafford. Wow.
Robinson's out.
I still don't know if I'm going to trust the Rams, but that is a high number there. 7.5. Maybe the Seahawks are a top 10 team. I don't know. We'll find out tomorrow on the Power Ranks. Bick's Best coming tomorrow on the People Show. A lot more coming up on Sportsnet 650, though. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah on a Canucks game day, getting ready for the Washington Capitals. That was the People's Picks. Brought to you by PlayNow Sports. When you choose to bet on sports at PlayNow.com, you're playing on the only site whose profits go back to BC. Know your limit. Play within it. We're out of here. Back tomorrow here on the home of Canucks, Sportsnet 650.